Chapter 9.
As we traversed the underworld, we passed many enormous halls and roadways carved out of the stone by some ancient subterranean civilization. As to who they were, or what happened to them, no one knows. A shade attacked us each fall as we traveled, and there were many desperate battles, as the strongest of the knights was unable to release the full force of their powers for risk of Cabrians. Of course, the Shade had no hesitation in that regard, and they used their dark powers to kill many. We were met by the largest collective of Shade once we found their primary nest and an entrance into a great cavern. We fought with everything we had to get the stronger knights close enough to destroy them.
"Now that introductions are over," the Bringer said, looking at Dalen quizzically, "there's something I've been wanting to ask you."
"What's that?"
Dalen asked. "Is that blood on your coat?" Surprised, Dalen looked to his coat. He had been sure he cleaned off all the blood, but when shifting his coat he saw a few streaks he had missed that were under a natural fold in the cloth. "Light, the Bringer must be bloody perceptive to notice that."
"No, it's sauce," Dalen said. "Spilled some on me when I was eating a pie."
Arik held a very calculating expression and then smiled.
"I see.
So, where are we going?" "The capital. I just have to grab some of my things first."
"Your things? I thought your father lived here."
"Not anymore. They're my things now."
"He died?"
"Yep."
"I'm sorry."
"Don't be. If you had any idea what he was like, you'd be as happy as me to see him gone."
"You didn't get along?" Dalen laughed.
"Now that is a funny question, because while the answer is yes, it's at the same time a profound no."
"It sounds complicated."
Dalen laughed even harder. "You have no idea."
"Well, at least you're here to break the news to his friend."
"Friend? I have no..." Dalen stopped himself. "I mean, my father had no friends."
"Yes, he does. The farmer who gave your father a ride in his wagon. He's in the house."
"Peridon. The letter. Oh, black." Dalen ran inside to find Peridon sitting in the very chair Dalen himself had sat in before he had left. Peridon was holding Dalen's suicide letter, his face pale and expression horrified.
Who are you?"
Peridon asked. Arik entered after Dalen.
"He's the old tinker's son."
"Did you know?" Peridon asked Dalen through clenched teeth. Dalen couldn't think of anything to say. His intent had been to burn the note, along with his life's accounting.
"Know what?"
Arik asked.
"That the old tinker who lived here, Dalen, was really that day-breaking stone tyrant Daedalus the Conqueror."
"What?" Arik said, stepping forward and taking the letter. He read, and as he did so, utter incredulity crossed his face. Once finished, his eyes were wide, and he looked to Dalen. Anger crossed the Lightbringer's face, anger that seemed truly uncharacteristic from what Dalen had supposed of the seemingly kind-hearted man.
"Your resemblance is no coincidence," Arik said, slow and clear. "Your father was Daedalus the Conqueror."
Dalen swallowed, not sure what to do. He could pretend that he didn't know, but that would cause complications, especially with the things he wanted to grab. So he made his decision.
"Yes," Dalen said.
Peridon spat at the floor.
"That blackened son of a Shade! He's been living right under my nose for 20 years! I gave him a ride in my own wagon. We even had a duel, in which he beat me soundly. Light, I actually had a duel with Daedalus the Conqueror!"
Arik's face shook. He threw the note aside and paced across the floor.
"This is unbelievable. After all this time, the Conqueror alive! The Light truly must have a sense of humor if that was how we finally met. His age created the perfect disguise.
I didn't even recognize him. Yet now as I think about it, I can see his face under those wrinkles. It really was him.
Arik's eyes, like burning coals, turned on Dalen. And this explains your namesake, Dalen.
What are you talking about? Peridon asked. Dalen was Daelus the Conqueror's name in his early life, Arik said.
Really? He had another name? And he even had the gall to go by it?
Arik sneered.
And the gall to name his son the same. He had given it up for the darker Daelus once he gained power. Most people don't know this, which explains why he retook the name while in hiding.
Have a look at this, Peridon said, handing Arik Dalen's journal. It was under the letter. Arik took the book and began to read, his brow climbing with each crossing of his eyes. He flicked through the pages, reading briefly.
This is a full accounting of the Conqueror's life.
Peridon stood and paced across the room, kicking over the chair.
We should burn this place and everything that Daybreaker touched down.
Does that include you? He touched you, I'm assuming, Dalen accused dryly. What about the money he gave you, or your wagon? You better burn them all.
How do you know he gave me money?
Peridon asked. He told me. I was with him at the end. I'm not saying he wasn't a right blackened bastard, but his life here might still have led to some good.
Like what?
Peridon asked skeptically. The money he gave you?
That doesn't count.
Then throw the coin away, you little snot.
Snot? Watch your tongue, boy.
If you act like a child, I'll treat you like one. So put a rock in it and listen. If you don't count it as good that he spent his years fixing the town's things, look at me. I'm here solely because Daelus hid himself away, and if you knew anything about my father, you would know he wasn't exactly happy doing so. Living was the worst punishment anyone could have given him.
Peridon paused. He said as much in his note, but he still escaped justice.
At least we know the tyrant is finally dead, Arik said.
But how can we really know?
Peridon replied.
The word of his son? How can we trust that? And how can we even know that you're really his son?
Just look at his face, Arik said. Apart from his age, he's the express image of the Conqueror.
I never saw the Conqueror, Peridon said, apart from when he was hiding here, and by that time he was too old.
Peridon looked closely at Dalen.
But now that I look for it, there is a lot of resemblance. And your voice is even the same, just not as croaky.
Having any connection with him isn't something I'm proud of, Dalen said. But the light saw fit to bring me here, so I intend to live my life regardless of where I've come from.
I never knew he had a son, Peridon said. He must have fathered you after he went into hiding. But he's been living here for nearly 20 years, as long as the Daybreaker is supposed to have been dead.
Peridon looked directly at Dalen.
Who was your mother?
This was a question Dalen had prepared for.
Titina,
Dalen said.
The old widow?
Peridon said. Dalen nodded.
She died, what, 16 years ago?
The old widow, Titina, had actually befriended Dalen when he had moved to Carradale before she died. She had been somewhat of a recluse and had taken to Dalen, seeing that he was in much the same situation as her, all alone. She was the perfect person to claim to have borne a son no one knew of. She was able to suckle me as a babe, but after that was too old. I was sent away to the Mornington Prefecture and grew up in an orphanage. Mother died not long after.
Stranger things have happened, I suppose,
Peridon said, looking about the room. His face scrunched in revulsion, he continued,
I need to get out of here. I can't stand thinking such an evil murdering butcher has been living so close. People gotta know, though. I'll go tell the magistrate and pass on the letter.
Arik passed Peridon the journal, and the farmer retrieved the letter from the floor. He left the old cottage, shaking his head. And that was it. In a couple of falls, via many phonotrack communiques, the whole world would know the truth. Or half of it, anyway. Dalen had to reach the capital before the news spread enough to warrant further investigation, namely into Dalen's false birth.
"I see why the light sent me," Arik said after a small time of silence.
"Yeah? Why's that?"
"I'm to ensure that you don't follow in the Conqueror's footsteps."
"You're worried I might?"
"Honestly, yes."
"Me too." Arik nodded slowly.
"So the question is, how much are you like your father?"
Dalen laughed. "Now that, Bringer, was funny. The answer is not at all, and every bit the same."
"I don't understand."
"And hopefully, no one ever will."
Lyra and Cusaig visited the closest constabulary to find out about any violent encounters in the city. There were a few, but the one that stood out most was a violent murder in a street alley. Some beggar had been utterly butchered. They visited the alley, and Lyra picked up the very same scent as they had on the tiled roof. "Oh, light," Lyra said. "Things just got a lot worse."
"You smell him?" Cusaig asked.
"That, and you just stepped in poo."
"Busek,"
Cusaig said, cursing in his native tongue and scraping his shoe along the ground.
"You think the water they used to wash away the blood, they would clean the poo away, too? Disgusting city."
"Oh, get over it. It's just poo."
"No, it is not. I am fouled and need to wash."
"No time for that."
"I have to wash myself. I am fouled."
Lyra had enough. "If you don't get in line right now, I'll pick up that steaming turd over there and force it down your throat." Cusaig's eyes widened in horror.
You will not."
"Oh, yes, I will."
"I will stop you."
"You know my bonds are stronger." "I'm senior for a reason, Cusaig," Lyra bit out. "When it comes to our mandate or something that might threaten the order, you'll put up with literal crap, blood, pain, and death." Cusaig pressed his lips tight. "Good. Let's go." Lyra and Cusaig entered the Leyborn Skyport at low fall to find it bustling with activity and industry. The sight recalled memories from Lyra's childhood as she had grown up near the huge capital port in High Dawn. Dock workers raced back and forth, hauling cargo, driving wagons, sweeping docks, or directing traffic. There were several whalers skinning their most recent catch in more than one dock. Countless shipmen wearing common working clothes or the uniform of their respective ships also filled the port. They directed passengers, loaded or unloaded cargo, walked in merry groups off to a pub, or were returning to the dock to man their ships. Most slept during this time, but as every fall was lit continuously by the sun, it wasn't much of an inconvenience to switch sleeping habits to satisfy the demands of commerce. Some didn't even follow the falls and just slept whenever they got tired. They all gave Lyra and Cusaig a wide berth. The whale carcasses filled the port with the stink of blubber, but it wasn't nearly as strong as a true edge port.
"There's been too much activity here," Lyra said. "His scent is all mixed."
"He comes here to find a ship,"
Cusaig said, with a mouthful of pastry. "Light, Cusaig, can you please finish your food before talking?"
"No, I find food in this place that is not awful,"
Cusaig said, his mouth still full of food. Holding up the pastry he was eating, he continued,
"Look, it is cooked through, flaky, and has lots of butter. I am going to eat."
For a man who was so picky about food, Cusaig certainly ate a lot of it. And, as it turned out, Chirasians had some very different eating habits.
Cusack always ate with his hands, made a lot of noises when eating, threw his scraps on the floor or the ground, and of course had no problem speaking with his mouth full. Whatever. Let's separate. Someone's bound to have seen the boy. Cusack left and began interrogating every person he found. Though foreign, he was still instantly recognized as an Archon with the Order's white mantle over his shoulders and arms. Lyra grabbed the attention of a passing dock worker.
"Lady Archon," the man said, bowing.
"I'm looking for the portmaster," Lyra replied. The dockman pointed. Now that Lyra was looking in the right direction, the portmaster was easily identified. She was an elderly woman wearing a businesslike vest over a white shirt, a top hat, a puffy cravat, and a long laced skirt, with a ledger in hand. Light! What was this grandma doing being the portmaster? Wouldn't the stress of such an office kill her? And that sword on her side should have made her fall over. Lyra approached the older woman. Though surrounded by lackeys and clearly busy, the portmaster bowed respectfully.
"Master Archon," she said in a wheezy voice, "how can I serve you?"
"I'm looking for one of my brothers who might have caught a carrier out of the city," Lyra said.
"Oh, yes, and let me be the first to officially apologize to the Order that one of our noble protectors was asked to prove his legitimacy."
It literally took the woman twice as long to say this as a regular person.
"Word hasn't spread too far regarding the incident, and all I can do is hope that the Order will show leniency. My understanding is that the Archon wasn't wearing the mantle. He was quite young, and..."
"In what way exactly did you force my brother to prove his legitimacy?" Lyra said, unable to bear the slow discourse any longer. The woman swallowed.
"Ah, well, just a small demonstration of his powers. Nothing too disruptive, I assure you. The Archon chose to demonstrate his speed. Once the toll man knew his mistake, the Archon was offered every courtesy, I assure you."
"What was the name of the ship in question, and where was it headed?" The woman flicked through her thick ledger and really seemed to take her time. Lyra struggled to contain her growing impatience.
"It was the Farwen, headed for Tremaine," the portmaster finally said.
"What's the fastest ship currently in port?"
"That would be the Sparrow, a runner owned by the National Post."
"It's now headed for Tremaine with two additional passengers. Make sure the ship doesn't leave until I'm aboard. The mail will have to be late. I'll collect my brother and we'll leave immediately." The portmaster paled, but bowed and walked away slowly. Lyra sighed, not feeling very proud of herself for being so brisk with the older woman. But seriously, she was in a hurry, and that conversation had taken three times as long as it had needed to. Lyra left, thinking about how the old woman described the boy using his powers. The boy had to be a lightbinder. There was no way to fake enhanced speed like that. But was he a brother? Surely he had to be, for only arch-knights could obtain the light-binding powers. Unless Cusack was right, and the boy had dedicated his life to fighting evil, and had learned the secrets of the Vigil independently. This was worrying, but not too much, for he could only survive the Vigil if his dedication was whole and true. But what about the deserters? Lyra asked herself. Knights that deserted their calling weren't common, but it happened, and it was serious enough that a special group existed within the knights to hunt them down. This had always bothered Lyra. If a knight lost their dedication to the cause, they should have lost their powers in the exact same way a Lightbringer did when they lied or committed a crime against the Light. But deserted knights still kept their powers. Once a knight got their powers, they kept them for life. This was true regardless of a change of heart. It was a close-kept secret within the Order that the world didn't know, yet it still didn't make sense. If the powers came from one's dedication to a cause, they should then be reliant on that dedication, shouldn't they? Then Lyra had another troubling thought. What if a person could get the powers regardless of their dedication? She had never thought of that possibility before, and it troubled her deeply. If it was true, anyone could become a lightbinder if they knew the secret, even someone wholly evil. What destruction and chaos could be wrought if that was the case? Lyra shook her head. It was a stupid thought. The powers had only ever been received by men and women who were willing to give up the rest of their lives to fight evil. But then Lyra thought of Vatem. Vatem had gone through basic training with her, and no one had seemed more devout than he. The knights had saved his and his family's lives from a shade, which was why he had been so eager to join. He was the one who had encouraged the others throughout the training and continually praised the knights. Yet, when they all underwent the vigil, Vatem was one of the recruits to have died. Lyra's trainer said Vatem must have had doubt in his heart, so soft and hidden that maybe Vatem himself wasn't even aware of it. But Lyra had known Vatem. No one was more committed than he. His death had troubled her ever since. Lyra found Cuseg speaking to a blushing young woman who was having a hard time looking at anything but the man's bare chest.
"Young, with blue hair," Cuseg said. "He is wearing a long coat with blood on it. He came to port last fall, you see?"
No, Archon. I wasn't here last fall."
"Then go,"
Cuseg ordered with a palm held up, his other hand holding what was left of his pastry. He turned to Lyra as the woman left.
"I am doing as you say, but it is stupid."
"I didn't expect much."
"Then why I do this?"
"There was a chance we might have learned something. It doesn't matter. I know where the boy went."
"And how did you find this?"
Lyra smiled. "I spoke with the portmaster."
"You send me to ask people who would have no chance to know while you do what I need to do."
"I'm sorry you didn't figure it out."
"I was doing as you say."
Lyra leaned down to the shorter man and patted him on the head.
"And you're a good boy for doing so."
Utter confusion crossed Cuseg's face.
"What does this mean? The touching of my head? Are you asking to have sex with me again?"
Lyra's heart leapt.
"What? No!"
She turned away, trying to regain control.
"Light, Cuseg!
Are all Turasians as perverted as you?"
"How am I perverted when you keep asking to have sex?"
Lyra's hand curled into a fist, and she had to stop herself from hitting him. She turned back, and judging by Cuseg's sudden hesitant expression, Lyra's rage was showing on her face. She hissed out her reply.
"Listen to me carefully, Cuseg, because I've had enough of this. I'll never have sex with you or any man. And if you ever talk to me about it again, I'll kill you."
Uncharacteristic shock hung on Cuseg's face. He blinked and then leaned forward, touching both hands to his forehead and then spreading them out before him. Lyra had only ever seen Cuseg do this to the Order's Archerons and the High Archain.
"My sister Lyra, I am sorry from the truth of my heart. I do not know. In my culture, to master self is great above all. We only show how we feel when we want others to see. Here, everyone show everything, and this is strange to me."
"What? Are you saying that you can't read facial expressions?"
"I know some faces, but here there are many I do not know."
Lyra sighed. "You can't read facial expressions."
"I can."
"But not all of them. And especially not the subtle ones."
what is subtle. Small. Yes, small faces. They are hard.
Lyra was finally understanding him. Cusack was misreading her anxiety and nervousness as attraction. That's why he thought she wanted to have, well, wanted to be intimate with him.
You've never wanted to have relations with anybody, she said. Of course not. And if they ask to have sex, they show they are weak and have no control. I show my body so people want sex, but must be strong to control. It is given honors in my home, so others can learn to be strong. I am not to have sex, and you show your control in the same. I do not know you are stronger than I think.
It was light, blessed hard to keep a rein on her emotions with all this talk of sex.
That's why you go about half-naked? She asked. Not because you want to be attractive, but to teach or force others to control any desires that might come from your appearance?
This brings honor in my home. Anyone who knows to master their body, show that it does not bother them to be seen naked, and do the same for other. For me who is master, it is not right that I wear clothes.
He says he's clothed while being half naked, Lyra thought. But it's clear from our first meeting that Cusack prefers to wear nothing but shoes and adornments.
Well, it's all right when you're away from your home, Cusack.
Yes, I know this now.
Good. Thank the light, that's cleared up. I've found where this boy was headed and commandeered a ship that'll take us to Tremaine. Once there, I should be able to pick up his scent again.
Then let us be off.